You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. Welcome to episode 292. And in this one, I interviewed Nathan Peterson. Nathan is an OCD specialist, and you may have seen his YouTube channel where he posts a lot of content and videos about OCD. And in the episode, I talked to him about his therapy journey, the difference between doing an exposure or ERP versus being exposed. We discuss examining the day ahead to find opportunities for proactive ERP and identifying compulsions. Why it's important to actively do ERP versus being exposed, the importance of reducing compulsions to help our brains learn new information around the things we worry about, ideas for sticking to ERP homework, and much more. And thanks always to NoCD for supporting the show. I deeply appreciate it. If you want to find out more about NoCD and their therapy services, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. So thank you to Nathan for his time, and of course to you guys, thank you for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Nate.
Welcome to the show, Nate.
Hey, thank you so much, Stuart. I'm so happy that I get this opportunity to talk to you today.
Yeah, it's really good to have you here. It'd be great to hear your therapy journey. So kind of what got you into being a therapist and then specifically working with OCD?
Yeah. So my mom is actually a therapist. Cool. She practiced inside of our home. And so I would come home from school, elementary school, and people would just be waiting in our living room for their appointments and kind of a different time. I don't know if people do that anymore, but I would find myself kind of wandering into the living room and being around these individuals waiting for their appointments and just talking to them, even though they were adults. And you know, over time, I realized like I love being able to figure out a way to help people. And I've kind of found throughout my life, people either gravitate to me and start telling me things that they're like, and then they'd end it with, you know, I never tell people these kind of things. I don't know why I told you that. And, you know, I realized like, hey, I think I got something here that, you know, people want to tell me something and I want to help people. Maybe this is the route I should take. Yeah. And, you know, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and really, you know, I didn't work with OCD my whole career, but, you know, saw my first patient in 2013 with OCD. And really the person I kind of credit for that is my brother. He's a therapist as well. He's been working with OCD, I think, for about 17, 18 years. And, you know, coming into his practice, I was like, hey, I want to learn whatever you know. And he said, great, go with this person. You're going to go to the grocery store and you're going to touch meat products. And I'm like, I don't know what this is about, but I'll do it. And you know, that's kind of how I started working with OCD, was, you know, really learning kind of the exposure route right off the bat. And knowing that the things I did before, which was more talk therapy, I didn't enjoy as much. And realizing this behavioral approach where I'm actually doing something with people and they're getting better. Like, I love that aspect of it. And so I've worked with OCD, really solely OCD, anxiety, tics and Tourette's, and BFRBs, like hair pulling, and since 2013. And that's really what I focused on. And I love it. It's so much fun to work with.
Yeah, that's amazing. The image of you in your living room as a kid, surrounded by clients that were going to see your mum. I don't know. It's really like, I don't know. It's just a comical image. I think you imagine it in like a TV show, a sitcom of these people getting advice from this young kid.
Totally. I would be so interested to go back and see their actual reactions as an adult. Like, do they want this kid here talking to them? Do they not? But either way, I'm sure it was a fun experience for them.
Yeah, I'm sure it helped to normalize the process as well, you know. So yeah, so today we're going to talk about doing an exposure or doing ERP versus being exposed. So yeah, what do you mean by this?
Yeah, you know, I've found throughout my career working with OCD, I'll hear people say the phrase, you know, that was a good exposure. You know, I went to a concert, that was a great exposure. Or I went to the grocery store, that was a good exposure. And I'm like, well, what do you mean that was a good exposure? Did you do an exposure? Or were you just in a place that brought you lots of anxiety and distress? And what I'd end up finding for most people is that they allowed themselves to be in those moments where they felt anxiety and distress, something that they kind of faced their fear with, but they didn't really do anything different about it. They just got through the moment and called it an exposure. And so I've thought about this throughout the years, like, are people really doing exposures, or are they just kind of being exposed to these moments? And for me, I want individuals when they, you know, are in those moments where, you know, I don't normally go to grocery stores, but I have to go, to possibly use an exposure with it, that it's going to feel like one. You're already there. You're already feeling distress and anxiety. How can you make it worthwhile? And going to a grocery store and coming home isn't really an exposure. You're kind of just being exposed. But going to a grocery store and touching things that maybe you normally don't touch or talk, normally don't interact with, not doing the compulsions, that's kind of an exposure. And so kind of allowing individuals to know, yeah, I, if I'm already going to be exposed, how can I make it worthwhile? And not see that as an exposure itself to do those things that cause me anxiety, but do something meaningful with the moment.
Yeah, it sounds to me like it's a mindset shift, because you're going to be exposed going to this venue, for example, regardless, but now you're actually choosing to make it more specifically an ERP activity exercise versus just being terrified and getting through it, you know?
Yeah. I think of one example very specifically. We're speaking with somebody. They, you know, they're preparing themselves. They're like, okay, I'm going to go to this movie theater. I'm going to watch a movie. And they were in my office. They were so excited. And like, I did an exposure. I went to the movie. And I'm like, cool. Well, what'd you do while you were there? And they're like, well, I watched the movie. I'm like, okay, well, what did you do? And, you know, I ended up finding out the biggest fear was, I'm worried something bad's going to happen because I'm in here. And so I made sure I sat on the far end so that nobody would, you know, just in case I need to get out. And I also made sure I didn't chomp my popcorn very loud, just in case people, I was bothering those around me. And I made sure I kept looking at those exits to make sure no one was going to come in. And, you know, but I made it through the movie. And I'm like, you know, that's wonderful that you got through that moment. You felt a lot of anxiety, but there's a lot of compulsions in there. And so making it more meaningful, that you already know you're going to go there, that if I'm worried something bad's going to happen, I'm going to make sure I sit in the middle of the movie theater so that I can't get out just in case. I'm not going to look at those fire exits just to make sure that, you know, if something bad happens, I'm not going to know about it. If I'm worried I'm going to chomp my popcorn too loud, I'm going to chomp it really, really loud so people behind me are possibly super annoyed. I don't know. But I'm doing these things to face my anxiety and make it more meaningful. And so, you know, those moments, I don't say like, well, shame on you for not making it worthwhile, but allowing people to realize there is a difference between doing that exposure and kind of just being exposed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the bit you said about that this person was doing a lot of compulsions. They, as you say, they were brave. They kind of got through it, but when you examined it, there was a lot of compulsions in there, where they were sitting, how they were chewing their popcorn, etc. Whereas I guess when you make it an actual, turn it into an actual ERP activity, you're more likely to be aware, okay, I'm going to be doing compulsions. How can I not do compulsions? Versus just going into a place that's going to trigger you, you may not be as mindful of with whether you're doing compulsions or not. Is that, yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. I have individuals kind of examine their life, examine their day. Mm. What are the things today that I'm going to do that are already probably going to make me feel uncomfortable, whether it's changing my child's diaper or it's going to the grocery store or watching a movie. So I might sit there and have individuals write down, what are compulsions I might catch myself doing while I'm changing this diaper, for example? All the things I'm going to avoid, I'm not going to look, I'm not going to wipe as hard, whatever it is. And those are the things I'm really going to focus on not doing while I'm doing this exposure. And making it really meaningful, leaving the threats uncertain. That's a big piece, is I'm not going to figure any of this out and only solve a problem when there's a problem presented right in front of me. There isn't a problem, I have nothing to solve.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, good description. And I like the writing it down. Just really being thoughtful about the day and yeah, how can I use this as part of my treatment? So I guess you've answered it, but I guess I'll ask it explicitly, is why is it important to go after it in my question, meaning like, why is it important to actively do an exposure versus just getting exposed?
I know we need to teach the brain what's a false signal and what is not. That all the brain knows is that I'm going to be you're feeling some anxiety here, and I'm going to tell you that you're in danger. And if you react as if you're in danger, then I know that the signal I sent you must be correct. And so if I don't correct that, and I'm the only one that has that power to do it, it's going to keep sending that signal time and time and time again. But if I can sit back and say, okay, I know I get triggered by this every single time, I'm going to do an exposure. So I'm going to step closer to this threat, whatever I think it is, really practice some uncertainty statements, most likely, whether it's a maybe, maybe not, or sometimes people use totally, or, you know, we'll see, I don't know, we'll never know for sure. And focusing on those compulsions as well. When I'm not doing those compulsions, I'm taking value away from the fears and the threats. And not saying the fear doesn't matter, but to say, you're sending me this signal here that I don't think matters. I'm going to almost test the theory out. I'm not going to react the way you want me to react. And that anxiety and distress tends to go down all by itself. There's a point where the brain starts learning and it says, hey, I think I sent you a false signal because you didn't respond the way I wanted you to. And so maybe next time, you know, you have a better chance of maybe not having that signal that I sent you, because what's the point? If you're not reacting to it, it's not valuable anymore. Yeah. And so I guess that's the biggest piece that comes to my mind, is if we don't change that aspect, it's going to continue being the same.
Yeah.
And we're the only ones that have that power to retrain it, because someone else can't say, this doesn't matter, don't worry about it, you're perfectly fine. That doesn't retrain it. You've got to be the person that does it.
Yeah, very true. And I liked the bit about, you said your brain going, oh, maybe you're not reacting, maybe I sent you a false signal. And I think I often describe it in different ways, but I think that's a nice wording for it. The brain says, yeah, maybe the fire alarm wasn't necessary on this occasion. How often does this come up with your clients, where, so you gave the cinema example, how often do you feel that some of them are kind of doing, sort of being exposed, thinking they're actually doing ERP when really they're being brave, but they're being exposed, you know, they're missing the response prevention and the other stuff. Does this come up a lot? Or
Yeah, I like how you said that, being brave, because we definitely give them credit for the things they're doing. But yeah, I actually feel like I see it quite often. And I don't know if you've experienced that through your practice, but hearing individuals say, oh, well, my dad came into town and that was a really big exposure for me. Or, you know, they'll explain different scenarios that have happened in their life recently that, you know, I let my kid go to school. That was a good exposure. And, you know, when we are diving into, you know, how did that exposure go for you? Most of the time when I find that statement being used, it wasn't really an exposure. They really just were being brave, but being exposed. And so kind of going back to what we said earlier, if we're already going to feel anxiety, we might as well make it more meaningful, because it's already there. We've got to be the ones that direct it and to know the right direction for it. And so pretty often from what I see.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, makes sense. And I wonder if that has anything to do with, like, you know, sometimes I think most of us are guilty of it, meaning therapists and also people with OCD and advocates of, we'll talk about ERP, but we'll just say exposure therapy, you know? And I think maybe that's where that's kind of come from, is that we've just focused on the E part and not the RP. Yeah. So if they are just being exposed, there's a good chance, as you said, they're still doing the compulsions. So if we stick with the cinema example, that person, your client, probably white knuckled that experience. And it was probably really tough for them for the 2 hours they were in the cinema, because they were doing compulsions, which was either, I know you don't follow the habituation model, but it was either not allowing them to habituate, or it wasn't allowing them to learn anything new in terms of inhibitory learning. So I guess that's the downside of being exposed versus actually doing ERP, is we're not allowing that new learning to occur because we're being brave, but we're white knuckling through it, as opposed to, you know, not doing the compulsions.
Right. Mm. And, you know, I think there is that level of, you know, if we look at that habituation model, the anxiety tends to go down the longer we stick with an anxiety moment. Mm. But the brain doesn't learn much from that experience other than, yeah, you got yourself through it. And so if I went to that movie again the next week and the next week and the next week, and I still did those compulsions, it's probably going to be the same experience I have every time.
Yeah,
would be my guess, is that I'm just white knuckling through it. Maybe I feel that sense of, you know, I am brave, I did it, but how come it's not getting easier? Why do I have to go through this high anxiety moment? And maybe it reduces a little bit, but at the end of it all, my brain says, good job for checking those exits, because if you didn't, you never know what would have happened. Or, you know, good job for keeping yourself safe. That's really all it knows, because that's what we're teaching it. And so allowing that brain to learn something brand new and experience that over and over and over again, that's where it's really, really powerful, because usually that one experience doesn't change everything. It's allowing this lifestyle to be there. I'm doing this with hopefully most moments in life that are coming up, even if I don't expect it to come up. I'm feeling anxiety. I'm being exposed already. What can I do about this moment? A lot of people tend to go to the same compulsions they've always gone to. And so we already know I'm almost committing myself that I don't ask for reassurance anymore. And so if I don't do that, this isn't, because I have a new moment come up, it doesn't reset my goal. It says, no, I said I wasn't going to ask for reassurance, so that's something I'm not going to do right now. And I could be wrong. I don't know, but I'm willing to risk it. I tend to look for the problems that almost like slap you in the face that you know 100% is an actual problem to fix, not a perceived threat. And it's really, really tough, because I know with anxiety and obsessive thinking, it really can feel like this time is different. This time is new. And so you must react, you know, as if you're in danger. But it's so, so tough, but people commit to it and say, okay, I don't see it. I don't see immediate danger. I only checked once. I'm willing to just let it be. And whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
It's definitely easier said than done, of course.
No, but yeah, it's a really good point. The brain, the amygdala can't tell between, you know, the saber-toothed tiger and the OCD worry, you know, it feels as real to that part of the brain. But yeah, how did you say that? I'm forgetting. You said something that was good, so we'll leave it at that. I can't remember what, but I had a point. So... Yeah, where's my next question? God. So, yeah, I know earlier you talked about like getting them to write down or think about their day and like how can I turn these various exercises today into actual ERP opportunities. Yeah, it was how do you encourage your clients to do the homework or the home practice that's so important to actively doing ERP versus kind of just having a mindset of I'm going to move towards the things I fear, which is good. But obviously, if we're doing compulsions, it's not great. Yeah, so it's just how do you really get them to have like a, what's the word? ERP first mindset.
I like that. You know, I really love calendars. That's just something we use calendars almost for every other aspect of our life. Whether it's like, go pick up the kids from here or go to the grocery store or, you know, whatever it is. But I say people add this into their calendar, into their life, right in the morning to have that mindset for the day. Here's how I'm really working on this compulsion specifically to not do this specific one, or I am facing this specific fear today. Here's how I'm going to do it. People are more likely to do these exposures throughout the day when they start the day off that way. So it might be 8 a.m. I have this exposure scheduled. For me, I have people schedule out an action I'm going to do, whether it's touching a certain item or watching a video or going to a grocery store or whatever it is. And writing this all out, I've got this action. I've got these statements I'm ready to go with, uncertainty statements. And for me, a lot of times what we come up with is take all the threats that are going to possibly come to your brain and leave them uncertain. So will I get sick? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Will this thing hurt me? Maybe, maybe not. Will I hit somebody with my car? Maybe, maybe not. That we're using that phrase over and over and over again. And planning out, like I said, those compulsions, we write down everything we think is going to happen the best of your knowledge. And we're going to really focus on not doing those. And so we might say, let's do this at 8 a.m., 12 p.m., 3 p.m., 5 p.m., however ambitious you want to be. But I know the more people do it, the faster the whole process is of therapy. That some people say, oh, I did exposures and I find they did it like one time a week. And it's like, that's just not enough. It's got to be kind of that lifestyle where these are very planned out. We know these experiences are happening throughout the day. You're already going to do it. This is how we're going to make it meaningful. Mm-hmm. But then those moments that are not planned, how are you going to be ready for those that we didn't expect? You know, for example, to share kind of a personal experience the past few days, you know, my five-year-old went to kindergarten for the first time. And we get a call at 3:30, which means the bus is already supposed to be, we're at the bus stop, and they call and they say, hey, we can't find your daughter anywhere. We lost her. And I'm like, oh my goodness, what in the world? And they're like, we'll let you know if we can find her. I'm like, hey, well, the bus is supposed to be here in 1 minute. If she's not on the bus, I don't know what the problem is. I don't know what to do. And they call back 10 minutes later and say, hey, we found her. She's on the wrong bus. We're going to bring her back to the school. And, you know, it's definitely a moment where not planned. And I can totally say that was an exposure for me to go through that. I definitely was being exposed with anxiety and real threats.
Yeah.
But I actually still left a lot of it uncertain. on purpose. The things I knew are the things I'm focusing on. The things I don't know, whether it's, did she get kidnapped? Did she get on the wrong bus? Did she follow somebody else? Whatever it is, I'm actually leaving those all uncertain because I don't know. And there's not much I can do in this specific moment.
Yeah.
So those things that are not planned that come up in our lives, how can we do exposures with those? And you know, we use that word a lot, exposure, but it's really, how can I react differently to even real threats and perceived threats that are coming in my life? Things ended up being okay, luckily, with my experience. But definitely scary, not planned at all. But we need to learn how to handle those moments when they do come up, is even the perceived moments of, what if she doesn't make it on the bus today or tomorrow? I have to be uncertain about it and just hope for the best. That I know the brain's really good at taking those experiences that have really happened and saying, well, and that means it's going to happen again. And it's really our goal to say, I'm exposed really with this anxiety and this fear, but I'm going to practice responding differently to it and just saying, eh, I don't know. We'll see. If there's a problem, I'll fix it. And it's super hard to do, but
yeah, good example. Thank you for sharing. The thing that came to my mind is, if your mind had run away with all of these worst case scenarios, which sounded like part of your brain wanted to do that, you would have just made the situation worse for yourself, and it would have been even more painful and anxiety provoking. And but kind of living in that uncertainty actually made it a bit better, not in like a happy way, but it was bad instead of terrible, when it didn't need to be terrible because everything was okay, you know. I remembered what I was going to say earlier, because you talked about kind of ERP, and it's not just doing it once, you know, it's doing it multiple times, and it to get those new learnings. And you know, especially with particular worries, and we're doing compulsions over and over again for years, you know, so doing one exposure or ERP exercise is not going to rewrite all that years of conditioning, you know. So I mean, that was worth highlighting, but it links back to what you were just saying around adherence to kind of homework and your clients that seem to just do it like 8 times a day, you know, instead of like once in the week, and the importance of that. But also, I like that you talked about, or with them, about writing down, like going back to writing down your day, what are all the opportunities? So that way you don't have to then find time for ERP, you don't have to make time for ERP. You're just adapting time you're already spending in the day to ERP, which I think is a nice way of selling it in, because, you know, I'm a busy guy. If I have to suddenly think I need to fit, oh God, these free, you know, ERP 30 minute activities in, no way, you know. But if you say, well, just look at your day, where can you already change a couple of things, and you've got it. I think,
you're so right, because it's, we're already busy. We already have things to do, and it's not as simple as like, oh man, I gotta unstack the dishwasher again today, because that's easy. Exposures can be tough. It's saying, I have to feel probably some distress and anxiety, do something that my brain's urged me not to do for however many, maybe months or years, that like, why would we do that? And the brain is already going to tell the person not to. It's going to say, don't do it. You're not up to it today. This isn't the time, because it wants to protect. It doesn't want you to feel anxiety, because that's the function of it, is how can I get you to not feel anxiety today? And doing these exposures is already hard. So if we leave it open to just say, I'm going to do an exposure sometime today, our chances of doing it are going to be pretty slim. But if we say, I've got this set 8 a.m., 5 p.m., whatever your schedule is, I mean, you might still not do it, but you have that there all ready to go, just in case you have that motivation, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And I treat it just like any other skill in our life. The more you do it, the better it's going to be. And it doesn't feel normal, doesn't feel natural. Just like if I were learning to do the splits, it's going to feel super uncomfortable. And my brain's going to tell me there's no way I'm going to get all the way to the bottom here with my legs. Like me personally, I don't think I've ever touched my toes as an adult, like with my legs straight. That in my mind, I'm like, there's no way you're going to do that. But I bet you I could do it if I practiced it over and over and over and over again and did the stretches when I'm supposed to. But I won't know if I can get to the other side unless I do it often. But if I did these stretches maybe once a week, I bet you that progress is going to be very slow if I ever make it there. And so this is a tough process, but worth doing for the brain to learn that, like, hey, I told you were in danger, but nothing happened. And you need to have that experience over and over and over again.
Yeah, I like that analogy or metaphor. There's definitely a YouTube video there of like stretching like several times a day to show you how quick it changed, you know? I like that. And then I guess a big one for me is, especially when people relapse, and this isn't always the case, obviously, but sometimes if they're relapsing, there's a good chance they've stopped doing the things that made them better in the first place, which could be actively doing ERP. Maybe it's other things, but for some people. So how do you encourage your clients when they end with you? Yeah, to kind of keep having this sort of ERP approach to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. The maintenance stage is super, super important, because you know, somebody might come see me and we do 12 sessions or whatever it is, and it's not okay, you're doing well, you can go back to just life. And what it really is you go back to life, but knowing that you're doing exposures for things that have already bothered you that don't bother you anymore, to remind yourself that you're still the boss. That it might be, I make it a point to touch this thing every single day, even though it doesn't bother me anymore, or watch this video clip, or use the script that I have. I'm just going to read it every day to maintain the progress I've already made. Just like the splits example, I can't just do the splits one day and be like, I did it, I made it. Now I just don't have to do it anymore. That I bet you if I stop doing the stretches, I'm going to start losing progress and lose momentum on that. And so just like this, we make it a lifestyle. I still have people schedule it out. How can I remind myself, usually in the morning, I like the mornings the best, right in the morning, that this thing doesn't really bother me. And I'm going to remind myself it doesn't. And usually when I see a relapse of some kind where symptoms all of a sudden come back pretty quick, it tends to be with newer topics or older topics that have come back, where OCD is so good at saying this one is different. I know the other one you were able to get through, but this one is special. And we have to teach the brain, like, nope, it's not as special as any other thing. That I kind of use the equation, if I'm feeling anxiety, I look around me, I don't see an immediate threat or danger, I'm just going to say, man, this is probably OCD, and I'm willing to risk that right now. And I might be wrong sometimes. I think that's the scary part.
Yeah.
But that is kind of the equation I give people, is you kind of live your life with, if you're even questioning with anxiety, we're just going to say, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm willing to step closer to the threat and not figure it out on purpose. And it seems risky, but it's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a leap of faith. Where are my questions gone? Slightly different question. How has your view of how you do therapy changed over the last few years?
Yeah, I like that. When I first started doing therapy, one aspect that I've changed quite a bit is, at the very beginning, actually for a few years, the only phrase I would have people use is kind of just maybe, maybe not. maybe not, to remind themselves that this is uncertain and it's okay to have both answers. We're not going to figure it out. And over time, I've kind of adapted to, yes, I still use the uncertainty, but sometimes I agree with the threats, which sounds strange, but it might be, you know, I touch this thing and my brain says, I'm going to get sick. That I might say, yeah, probably, totally. Hope I get sick. That'd be great. That'd be cool if I got everyone else sick around me. That using that kind of language, I've kind of adapted into my practice because it really anxiety a little bit more and almost tells the brain that, like, wait a second, you're telling me that this is a big deal, but you are totally going way against what I want you to do. It's almost like talking back to the bully a little bit. It's like, oh, you don't want to get people sick? Cool. I hope I get people sick today. That I've seen that be pretty successful with people when they use that kind of language, where it's more of just accept it, even if it seems weird and strange and this isn't the thing I should be accepting. I integrate that kind of language for those who are ready for it, who are willing to use it. And they share that feedback with me that this is awesome. They use it all the time with things that come their way. And it can be with any, really most topics of OCD as well.
Yeah.
That's one thing I've changed.
Nice. Yeah, I really like that. I always look at it as like OCD is trying to scare you, now you're trying to scare it, you know, and if you scare it, then it will back off. Kind of like, it, as you say, you know, I'm just trying to help you, like, don't have a go at me sort of thing. So you pick up the phone, call your 20-year-old self. What do you tell him?
Wow. I've heard you ask this question to other people and I was like, man, I got to have my answer ready, but I didn't think about it. 20-year-old self. Probably just be patient. Let things flow. Not everything has to be like go, go, go all the time. I feel like there's so much pressure in like things you should do and you need to do, when really we miss out on life aspects because we're moving so fast. That it's just enjoying the moment right here, right now, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, 20-year-old self, I probably was in college, but it's like, enjoy college, enjoy the people around you. Not always, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? I think enjoying the moment and being okay not knowing what the future holds. I don't know if I'm going to be a therapist. I don't know if I'm going to be a doctor. I don't know if I'm going to, you know, whatever I'm going to work at, it's okay not to know everything. Maybe that's what I tell myself. You don't need to know everything and enjoy the moment.
Yeah. Well, it kind of ties in with OCD, right? Living in the uncertainty of the moment and just going with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And then your billboard. What do you want written on the billboard?
The billboard. Oh, man. Kindness. Yeah. I don't know. Kindness always comes to my mind as just if people are more kind to each other, looking for each other's needs, I feel like the world would be a little happier place. And so maybe it'd be something like find the needs of others, or, you know, maybe that's cliche, but that's kind of what I think in my mind is, and if I'm finding the needs of somebody else and they're finding my needs, we're getting taken care of as a community and society.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. Really good point. And then lastly, is there anything else that you wish you could have shared today?
Yeah. I love OCD work. Don't like OCD specifically.
But I was gonna say,
working with it is amazing. I have so much faith in this type of treatment, and that's why I've stuck with it for so long. And just for anyone listening, being able to know that, like, if you feel like there's nothing working for you, like, it can work. In my mind, I don't know every person in the world, but people are having the right tools and knowing what to do, man, this treatment can really, really work well. It's just knowing how to do it correctly. And so not not giving up. I want people to know not to give up on their treatment, because life is worth living. And this is one of the best treatments I've ever run into, and especially for OCD, because it's the gold standard.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Great way. Great words and great way to end. Cool. Well, look, thank you so much, Nate, for coming on, sharing your wisdom. And I'll put links in the show notes to all the stuff and work you've been doing. So thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Stuart. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.